This is The Best of Our Knowledge, a presentation of National Productions.
Back in 2015, we ran an interview with actor Alan Alda about the Alan Alda Center for Communicating Science. Since then, the center has been conducting workshops with scientists and other professionals around the country, teaching the best ways to clearly communicate complex ideas.
How are you going to do this? How are you going to make this information salient, relevant, alive to this audience or person you're trying to connect with who comes from a really different way of experiencing the world?
Today on The Best of Our Knowledge, we'll talk to the director of the center to get an update on how their mission continues to evolve. We'll also spend an academic minute checking out some nasty tattoos. Well, at least the nasty stuff in the ink. I'm Bob Barrett, and this is The Best of Our Knowledge. Most of us know the actor Alan Alda from MASH and The West Wing, but it was his time as host of the PBS show Scientific American Frontiers that inspired him to start the Alan Alda Center for Communicating Science. Back in 2015, he spoke with R. Pat Bradley about the center.
I think it's really important. Our lives are run on science, and if we don't understand it, we can't make informed objections about things that we're worried about. And it's important for the public to communicate with science about ways in which science is affecting them. When you think about the controversy over vaccinations, for instance, I think you could make the case, given what science has shown over and over again, is that the worries are not well-founded about the safety of vaccinations. So I think the public needs to be communicated with in such a way that they can raise good objections when necessary, but based on real science, not based on baseless fears. And it's up to science, it's up to the scientists, I think, to communicate it with such clarity, but accuracy, so that the public is glad to get the real story. I mean, we want to know the real truth. And when you go through this process, you get transformed a little bit. We don't give tips on how to communicate. We put you through experiences that help you communicate better, lead you to the point where you just naturally, with an open heart, are glad to communicate more openly, to make more personal contact with the audience, to be aware of whether or not they're understanding the technical stuff you're talking about, and to also be aware in your own head about whether or not it's accurate, and that you're not dumbing it down for them, because that doesn't benefit them either. Doesn't benefit science, doesn't benefit the audience.
Since then, the center has evolved a bit and grown a lot. Also since then, they have a new director. She is Laura Lindenfeld, a professor in the School of Journalism at Stony Brook University, where the Alda Center is headquartered. I spoke with Dr. Lindenfeld recently to get an update and noted that the center's mission statement seems to be right in its name.
Yes. It does. We are in the business of training scientists and medical professionals to communicate, and we do that by helping them build skills in empathy and clarity.
And if I recall, when we originally ran a story and spoke to Alan Alda, he talked about the importance of teaching scientists to speak in stories. Is that still something that goes on?
Yeah, I think more broadly, you know, why speak in stories? Stories help us connect. And if you look at what we do is we help scientists to communicate with audiences in ways that land with them, with those audiences. So the piece about empathy is that communication lands when we have a relationship. And whether it's an actual one, like here you and I, we've never met in person, but we're talking by phone and we're connecting, I'm trying to think about what you and your audience need from me through this interview. And that's really what we're training scientists to do, is to imagine what it's like to be in the shoes of the person who you're connecting with.
That's very interesting, because I imagine a scientist who is explaining this to someone who is so not a scientist, there would be different instances where that would have to happen. They would really have to say, okay, what does this person need out of me?
Absolutely. And what's really fun about this is that it helps us support the scientists to become more creative in how they communicate. It's this, I don't know, when you spoke with Alan before, he may have talked about this concept of the curse of knowledge. It sounds weird, doesn't it, like to be cursed by knowledge? Knowledge is a great thing. curse of knowledge is when you know something so well, you can't remember what it feels like not to know it anymore. And when you suffer from that curse, you're only going to communicate about your knowledge in one way. And that's the way that you currently know. So you're going to lose distance from what it feels like not to have all the wisdom and experience that you have. And what we try to do is encourage scientists. We do this through workshops, very, very hands-on, experiential, based in improvisational theater training and techniques to really design effective messages for that audience, to imagine what it feels like to be someone who doesn't have their level of insight on a particular topic. So it brings out all this remarkable creativity. It's a lot of fun for the scientists as well to think about, how are you going to get this point about something so complex across to people who really don't know where you're coming from?
It must be interesting to just get scientists to realize that they've got to do this.
Yeah, it's interesting. For some people, they've had enough experiences. We'll say to people in workshops, do you ever go home like for Thanksgiving dinner or some holiday dinner and your family asks you, what is it you do again? And you don't want to answer that question, and lots of heads nod. So there are varying levels of awareness that speaking in scientist talk doesn't come across as clearly with everybody.
So I imagine once you get them through the door, then they're pretty open to, okay, I need this.
I think, you know, it's, like I said, it's a very experiential kind of training where we have the scientists, we have the participants talk about what they see the challenges as being. And they name this. They say, you know, we're very technical. We use jargon. People don't necessarily understand the value of what we do, and that's frustrating to us. So we have them name that before we really dig in and try to think about how to address this challenge.
And I imagine one of the challenges would be to give the information in an understandable way without, and I know you people hate this term, dumbing it down.
Yeah, it's never about dumbing it down. It's finding ways to connect that are different from how you might have experienced and seen the world, and that's where this piece about creativity comes in. It's where the improvisational theater comes in of how are you going to do this? How are you going to make this information salient, relevant, alive to this audience or person you're trying to connect with who comes from a really different way of experiencing the world?
Since you're talking about improv, how much was Alan involved in developing this system, and how much is he involved today?
Alan is truly deeply involved in this. He cares so much about it. He goes out and gives talks on the Center's behalf all over the place. I think you've seen his recent book, If I Understood You, Would I Have This Look on My Face? The subtitle is Relating to and Communicating with Others, From the Boardroom to the Bedroom. It's really about communication in everyday life. It also tells some of the story about the center and its founding and background. So, Alan, to answer your question, he's deeply involved in this. This method that we use is designed and inspired by him. He did a lot of work on Scientific American Frontiers. For years, he shot documentaries where he would interview scientists. And when you were asking me before about stories, he found that if he could get people to connect, make eye contact, and feel relaxed, and communicate in a conversational tone, he could draw these incredible stories, analogies, communications out of the scientists. And there's one particular incident where he noticed a scientist with whom he was communicating. She'd remember the camera, and she'd look at the camera, and she'd go into this like talking head mode. And then he could coax her back into the conversation, and it would feel conversational and alive again. And then she'd remember the camera, and she'd look at the camera. And he thought to himself, I've heard him describe this. What if we could use improv theater like I had as an actor, inspired by Viola Spolin, the mother of improvisational theater, founder of improvisational theater? What if we could use that technique with scientists to help them relax and connect? And he tried it out, and it worked. So that was like 2009, the center was started.
Now, you're out of Stony Brook. What other universities are you affiliated with?
The Center for Communicating Science is located here at Stony Brook University. I'm so glad you asked this question. We've trained almost 12,000 scientists around the world. So while our center is here at Stony Brook, there's a company that we work with called Alda Communication Training. It's Alan's company. It really helps us bring this to institutions across the world. I think we've been to hundreds of different universities, national labs, government agencies, and companies, and now increasingly more outside the U.S. as well.
What kind of feedback do you get, not only from the scientists, but I don't know if that's possible to get feedback from people the scientists talk to, but what kind have you gotten?
I love when we go and we do a workshop, and a few days later, I'll get an email from a scientist saying, do you remember how I told you I was scared about the following situation? I'll give you an example. Let me bring this to life through an example. We did a workshop last summer. I don't do all of these myself because we do about 100 of these a year, so it's a lot. We've got a big team that goes out and about, but this one I did in particular, and this scientist said to me, and it's fairly consistent that we hear this. My worst fear is I'm going to be on a plane next to somebody, the scientist says. They're going to ask me what I do. I'm going to be stuck in this plane, and then I'm going to start talking, and I'm going to bore myself. So this particular scientist tells me this, and I said, well, let's work on that. We work on these activities. He comes up with a really nice pitch about his work, goes home. And the next day I get an email and he writes me and he says, I have to thank you for this workshop. I, as you know, dread the airport and airplane conversation. And on my way back, I wound up sitting next to an older woman and she asked me what I did. And I tried out what I learned from you guys. And we talked for 20 minutes and she asked for my card. And I really felt like I was able to connect with her. So we hear a lot of stories like that where people are able to walk out of the training and really focus on who they're connecting with and why the work that they do might matter to them. And what happens is the words come out of your mouth differently than they would. It's not just that you come across differently, it's that you speak differently. You find different ways to express what you do and why you care about what you do.
Still to come, our conversation with Dr. Laura Lindenfeld continues with a look at how the Alan Alda Center for Communicating Science is expanding its reach and its goals. That's next on The Best of Our Knowledge. Got any questions or comments about The Best of Our Knowledge? Well, send them in. Our email address is knowledge@wamc.org. And if you'd like to listen to this or any past programs again, you can find them online at our flagship station's website. Just go to wamc.org and click on the programs link. And while you're there, subscribe to The Best of Our Knowledge's podcast or download the WAMC radio app to listen on demand anytime, anyplace. This is The Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Bob Barrett. Our guest today is Dr. Laura Lindenfeld, the director of the Alan Alda Center for Communicating Science and a professor in the School of Journalism at Stony Brook University. I asked Dr. Lindenfeld if there were thoughts of expanding the mission of the center beyond just talking to scientists.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things I'll tell you is we do some work in the medical arena as well, where we help doctors and teams serving patients connect better with them. And if you take a look, Alan's company is doing some work specifically around women in the business setting to help them communicate more effectively. I think that for me as a communication researcher, this is really, you've nailed this, it's about communicating complex ideas. It's about making sense of complex ideas that you may not understand and value if you don't have a little more insight into why they matter. So I'd like to see us continue to grow this training. I think this applies beyond science in particular. When I say science also, we're talking about STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. And although those areas work slightly differently, there's clearly a lot of overlap, there are some differences. And I can see that when we do workshops with engineers. It's a slightly different approach than with someone who's doing basic bench science, for example.
Well, I can say as somebody who did a show on health for 12 years, I know a lot of doctors who could have used your help.
We hear that all the time, all the time. I mean, you think about things even like the financial realm. That's very challenging information to understand if it's not something that you're living and experiencing every day. How are you going to convey that in a way that people have a not dumbed down version of it, a clear, this is about being clear and vivid. It's about conveying in a more concise manner what is at stake for your work, what's important about it, and why people should care.
I wonder if learning this communication for a scientist or a doctor or even a mathematician can help them focus on, you know, what their real goals are.
That's a brilliant point. Oftentimes we hear from participants that these workshops and the experience of working with us reminds them why they stepped up to do what they do in the first place. It's so easy to lose sight of why you care about your work when you do it on a day-to-day basis. You know that feeling where you're trudging along and you're doing what you need to do, and you may not necessarily be in touch with the passion that got you there to begin with? People come back and say to us, "You really helped me remember why this is important to me." And then I think that that's inspirational. You know, if you look at science, there's not a part of science that isn't touched and affected by communication. From the design of an experiment to the writing and delivery of results, communication happens across the entire spectrum. And more, science has moved toward large team models where people from different disciplines have to connect with each other to even be able to do effective science together. That's actually my own research area is teams, interdisciplinary science teams, and how they can work together more effectively with each other and with stakeholders external to the scientific enterprise who really need science to solve some of the complex problems that we face.
Interesting, and that scientists working together probably understand their own jargon, but they still need the training.
They do, and you know what? Jargon works really, really well when the person you're communicating with shares that language. There's so many differences within branches of science. Alan likes to talk about a situation where people sat down together to work on a scientific collaborative endeavor and wound up arguing about the definition of the word probe. You lose a lot of time. I've seen this myself, like, what does theory mean? What's the proper method? You'd lose a lot of time on teams, a lot of time and resources if you can't come to agreement about how you're going to work together. So this isn't just something, in my mind, that's for scientists and public audiences. It benefits the entirety of the scientific process. And the clearer you are on what you're doing and why you're doing it, and the more inspired you feel, I think the better work you're going to do yourself.
So where do you see this expanding in the next 5-10 years or so?
Oh, Alan would call it world domination. I say that jokingly. I really think this applies to so many contexts of our lives. Our mission here in the center is really about STEM and medicine. And I'd like to see us be able to move out even further into areas of the U.S. where we haven't spent as much time. I'd like for us to be able to work more internationally. To me, that's particularly fascinating. I spent 10 years of my life in Germany, and I know that cultural context matters a great deal. And this particular type of training helps attune you as the person who wants to communicate to cultural differences, whether that be from one discipline of science to another, or you're living in an entirely different country or working in a different context. So I'd really love to see us grow in that area as well.
Have you reached out to teachers, to educators? Is this something that they, you know, it seems to me this would be something that they could definitely use.
Yeah, that's one of the areas I'd like to see us do more work in. What we've been doing is we've been thinking about thematic areas and contexts where this work could really make a difference. So we're doing some work right now to support women who are in STEM fields in the particular areas of communication that they experience to be challenging, some of which is around politics and power differences. We're also doing some work around climate change communication. How do you talk about climate change when certain parts of the U.S. population may not want to embrace that work that you're doing? How can we even move a conversation forward? Education is an area I'd really like to see us grow into the next couple of years. I think that's going to be on the slate, because I think that whether you're communicating with a public audience or you're teaching, the same principles hold true. If you're connecting, if you're really focusing on them and their learning's going to be improved. I feel like every single day when I come to work, I'm investing myself in something really, really important. There's a phenomenal team of leaders here at the center who go out and do work that changes people's lives. I feel like we're able to help scientists and whoever's participating in our workshops to bring their energy and passion to the table You know, a lot of times scientists are concerned about objectivity in how they talk about their work. They have to be objective when they do their work. That doesn't mean that you forget your passion as to why you do it. And to be able to clarify that difference is so important. I'm inspired when I see scientists taking greater risks around their communication. And there are risks, bringing science to policy and decision-making, scientists testifying in courtrooms, scientists going out to community groups and talking. Public speaking is something many of us are afraid of, and I really appreciate that it's a sense of risk and challenge to do this. So I feel extremely grateful that I get to do this work that I do.
Dr. Laura Lindenfeld is the director of the Alan Alda Center for Communicating Science and a professor in the School of Journalism at Stony Brook University. You can learn more at aldacenter.org. Some people get tattoos that are tasteful and beautiful and make a statement. Others get tattoos that, well, aren't. But they all have one thing in common: ink. And that's the topic of today's Academic Minute.
Tattoos are common, but also pose a health risk. I'm Dr. Lynn Pascarella, president of the Association of American Colleges and Universities. And today on the Academic Minute, Greg Hall, assistant clinical professor at Case Western Reserve University, determines how toxic getting inked can be.
Almost half of people between age 18 and 35 have tattoos, according to a 2016 Harris poll. With such a large number getting inked, it's surprising the lack of awareness of the potential medical issues with tattoos. The Danish Environmental Protection Agency found certain tattoo inks can be toxic, with some containing carcinogenic or cancer-causing compounds. Likewise, an Australian government-sponsored study found 1 in 5 tattoo inks contained cancer-causing chemicals, and a vast majority of the inks tested did not comply with international health safety standards for ink composition. Even more concerning, carcinogens were identified in over 80% of black inks, with black ink being by far the most popular color for tattoos. The European Society for Tattoo and Pigment Research found barium, copper, mercury, and other unsafe compounds in tattoo inks. Their research also found a disheartening mismatch between the listed ink container contents and its actual chemical composition found on testing. Aside from the ink risks, there are a number of infectious risks associated with tattooing, with the risk of hepatitis C being the most prominent. Hepatitis, which is 10 times more infectious than HIV, can be transmitted through needles used by tattoo artists. A recent report by liver specialists found that tattoo exposure is associated with hepatitis C virus infection, even among those without traditional risk factors. They go on to say that all patients who have tattoos should be considered at higher risk for hepatitis C infection. With such a large number considering tattoos at a young age, making sure that people are aware of the health issues that tattoos could present may help them avoid tattoos they may later come to regret.
That was Greg Hall of Case Western Reserve University. You can find this, other segments, and more information about the professors at academicminute.org.
The Academic Minute is a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio, in partnership with the Association of American Colleges and Universities. That's all the time we have for this week's program. If you'd like to listen again, join us online at our flagship station's website. Go to WAMC.org and click on the programs link. And while you're there, subscribe to our podcast or any of the other WAMC or National Productions podcasts. And if you have any questions or comments about the program, send them in. Our email address is knowledge@WAMC.org. And you can find us on Twitter at TBOOKnowledge. I'm Bob Barrett. Be sure to join us next time for another edition of The Best of Our Knowledge.
Bob Barrett is producer of The Best of Our Knowledge. Dr. Alan Chartok is executive producer. The Best of Our Knowledge is a production of WAMC Radio's National Productions, which is solely responsible for its content. Hear more at WAMC.org.